Hello and welcome to the program. It has been an amazing week, what with the event Reasons and Results being in full swing. Over 20 speakers, over 5 days, an amazing journey. Many of those speakers had been on the podcast, and one of them particularly, Frankie Finn, was one of my very early guests. And I realised, like a lot of these early shows, they did not get much airspace at the time because it was a new podcast. And I thought, well, it's time to bring these shows out and re-release. Now, Frankie is an amazing guy. He's an entrepreneur. He's a traveller. This podcast might trigger you because it talks about taking ayahuasca. But that process that Frankie went through opened a completely new door in his life and revealed stuff to him, which is just amazing. He's since then become a shaman. And he works with people in a completely new space because of that experience. So it really is worth listening to. What is also, for me, it's quite nostalgic because it's the original intro that I created for the show. So I like the new intro and I like the old intro. And so I guess it reconnects me with the feelings I had when I was making these shows. So look, I hope you enjoyed the conversation with Frankie Finn as much as I did. Welcome to Life, Passion and Business. My name is Paul Harvey, and I'm looking for answers. What does it mean to be successful? What does it mean to have a good, well-lived life? This podcast is conversations with people that look like they have it sorted. I am always looking for entertaining guests and spend much of my time exploring LinkedIn, Facebook and Twitter. However, sometimes interesting people approach me, and that's how it was with Frankie Finn. We met on Facebook and he is a marketing connection, and while I did not know his full story, there was something in what he was saying that caught my attention. Like many of my connections, he seems to have the ideal life of travel and exotic locations. I went straight into this recording without any preconceptions, and I have to say it may trigger you as it touches on the use of an illegal substance, ayahuasca. Full disclaimer here, as this is by no means an advocation of its use, however, it is a fascinating story. Frankie Finn is outwardly successful. He's a well-known speaker, entrepreneur, and by his description, a master of the mystical arts. He operates a coaching and consulting business for lawyers and builds creative marketing systems. It is a laptop lifestyle, allowing him to travel and experience the world with his partner. However, since his exploration of life through ayahuasca, he looks at the world through a different lens. He calls himself a shaman in his coaching and uses intuition and vibration to work with people on different levels. The entrepreneurial life is often held up like a chalice, and in reality it is difficult. Frankie helps his clients express and release fears, frustrations and self-sabotage. He helps them bring more colour, vibrancy and meaningful connections to their lives while all the time increasing their business and personal freedom. It was a great conversation. As you will hear, Frankie had a real perspective on the big questions of success, passion and the meaning of life. I hope you enjoyed the conversation with Frankie Finn. Welcome to Life, Passion and Business. My name is Paul Harvey and today my guest is Frankie Finn. And Frankie is a Facebook connection. He approached me and said he has a story to tell. So as you know, Life, Passion and Business is all about how people bring those qualities into their life and everyday life. And so Frankie, enlighten us, tell us, how did you get to where you are today?
Well, Paul, I did promise you a crazy story. So I think I might have the craziest story of all time. I know that's kind of a... sounds pretty bold, but at least it's one of those stories that I feel like if I hadn't lived through it, I wouldn't have necessarily believed it myself. But my spiritual journey was pretty normal till I was about, I would say, 27 years old in business and so forth. And, you know, I don't think I was really thinking about anything really long term. It was just about, you know, how to make a buck and survive. And it was very, very short term thinking. And I remember that time I was really deep into the conspiracy world, and I came across something that is kind of, for many people, really hit critical mass, but back then it was quite new, which is all this stuff around ayahuasca. And it was a really, really interesting thing about me, because every time I would read it, I would read stories of people who tried it and had near-death experiences. Sometimes they would have blindness restored or lifelong depression cured from drinking it once. Cancer cured was one of those things.
Sorry, what is this? What is ayahuasca?
So for those who've never heard of it, it's depending on who you listen to, according to Western medicine, it's considered the world's most powerful hallucinogenic drug. And in South America, it's basically just known as a healing plant medicine that they've used for thousands of years. And so I don't think really for my
is it a controlled substance in the UK and in other places?
Yes, it is, and specifically in Brazil, Ecuador, and Peru, it's like it's very legal. So there's a whole tourism business based on that. What it actually is it synthesizes within you a chemical called DMT, which is basically what your body experiences during an actual near-death experiences, or when you have really, really deep REM sleep. That's what you're experiencing. So it gives you like a full-on kind of visionary experience like that. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. This is going to be very much out there for my listeners. So let's
see. Yeah, it's definitely, it was out there for me as well, especially Paul, because at the time I grew up with two alcoholic parents. So it was very like anti-drugs. It just wasn't something that would ever have been on my radar, but it was like, it was so interesting, the experiences that people described as part of it. And I remember deciding, okay, before I die, I wanted to try this thing just one time to see what it was like. And I didn't really think anything of it. So it was actually almost a full year later, and I was busy running an SEO agency of all things, you know, doing something as far away from that as humanly possible. And I decided one day I was going to try it. I had read so many stories and it was so intriguing that it really just caught my attention. And I ended up drinking it 6 times over 2 years. And it was really the third experience that was really, really crazy and kind of changed my life, really kind of altered the course of it permanently. So what happened for me is I took enough, and I was sitting there in my own house trying it, and I was, you know, I'd read all these crazy, profound, mystical journeys for people about, you know, like I said, cancer gone and blindness cured and depression gone. And to be honest, you know, being very candid with you, all I experienced was I was just hallucinating my ass off, and I felt really stoned, but I didn't feel like anything profound was happening. And I remember asking, like, where's my crazy healing? And it's kind of funny in hindsight when the universe answers, but it answers in a way you don't expect. So you don't really hear the answer. At least that's what it was for me. Is all of a sudden it was as if it physically took over my body. My right arm went straight up in the air, and then it lunged down and it grabbed this Kleenex box off the ground and held it about an inch from my face. And I remember being totally freaked out, and I used my other free hand to push it away. And I was like, whatever that was, don't ever do that again. And what happened was, I asked the same question again, where's my crazy healing experience? And this happened to me again. My right arm went up, pulled this Kleenex box an inch from my face. And it was really, really bizarre at the time. And I remember it happened 5 times in a row. And on the 5th time, I finally remember saying out loud, all right, I'll look at it. What are you trying to show me? And as I saw this Kleenex box, it said on it the words of dreams and inspirations. And they started to glimmer and become 3-dimensional. And that was like physically printed on the Kleenex box. But it started to like almost float out of it, and it like floated into me. And as I saw the words kind of go into me, I literally became inspired. And so I sat staring this Kleenex box. And of course, if I was, you know, out in public, I surely would have been arrested at that moment. So I wouldn't recommend anybody do that. But what ended up happening is I just saw like worlds and universes in my Kleenex box and felt completely inspired. And in the bottom left of the Kleenex box, there was this blue butterfly printed on it. And it wasn't really particularly significant at the time, but I sobered up, and the next day came by and normal life set back in. And I started experiencing a synchronicity where I saw this blue butterfly symbol, and it would come to me 10 to 15 times a day, every day for 2 years without fail in a million different forms, to the point where it was so far beyond coincidence for what my experience was going on. It was just like this reoccurring same sign. So like to give you a few examples, I remember I was with my girlfriend. We were at the grocery store. She said, hey, can you grab a vegetable tray? So I grabbed this vegetable tray, threw it in the cart, And it had, when I got it home, the cart itself, the veggie tray, was a blue butterfly, and in each wing they put a different kind of vegetable. But I had managed to grab it and buy it without even noticing. Somebody said, well, if you're interested in these substances and you want to learn more, you should listen to this speaker named Terence McKenna. So I kind of reluctantly went on YouTube, pulled up a video of his, and he was standing there giving a speech, living a blue butterfly, or wearing a blue butterfly t-shirt. Remember somebody asked me to look up a book on Amazon, and right next to it was a recommendation for a book about life after death or something like that. And the cover had a blue butterfly. And even like there were some really weird ones, to be honest with you, Paul, being probably a little too much information. But even in pornography, I was kind of in that world at that time. And I remember I'd be watching and a girl bend over and she'd have a blue butterfly tramp stamp on her. So like there was just nowhere it didn't find me. But the most interesting one was...
It sounds a bit like The Matrix, isn't it, really?
It really was. Certainly from my experiential point of view, it was just really bizarre. And I didn't know what it meant at the time. And it like, you know, it felt like it was leading me somewhere, but I didn't know that for certain. So what actually ended up happening to me, which is the most synchronistic of it all, is my girlfriend one time at the time she came home, she brought home this video game called Zelda. And I, you know, it was one of these games that I really geeked out on as a kid, but I hadn't played it in 20 years. And she said, there's a new one. I knew you loved this as a kid, so I got it for you. And it's a normal kind of like medieval game where you rescue the princess and save her from dragons kind of thing, quite nerdy. But in the middle of the game, I would see these blue butterflies floating in a circle in the middle of the meadows and the fields. And I just thought, here we go, more blue butterflies. So when I finally, you get like 4 hours in the game and you finally meet the princess, what happens is you get knocked out. And you wake up in the middle of the game with a spirit over top of you, and it just says, hey, you need to come right now. And so you follow the spirit, and you end up in this weird temple that you couldn't have previously reached in the game, and the spirit teaches you this healing song, and in the game then says, go play it where the blue butterflies gather. So suddenly, within the game, you have this song, and when you go play the song at the blue butterflies, what would happen is either these stones pop out of the ground and give you some kind of ancient wisdom, or the game heals your physical character, so it gives you all this healing energy. Or what actually happened to me is you physically leave your body and go into these sort of alternate realities and then come back with the experiences of them and like bring them to the back to the real world. And so that's what had ended up happening for me for 2 years. And then I finally drank it the last time I drank it on my own. And what happened was I had a vision within it that I saw this giant blue butterfly that was made of like millions of other tiny blue butterflies. And it was just that at that point, I'd seen the same symbol so many times that it reached critical mass that I decided just to Google it. So I Googled blue butterfly ayahuasca just to see what would come up if anybody else had ever experienced it. And there was just one thing. There was a retreat in Peru called Blue Morpho Tours that was an ayahuasca retreat. And so I went through, and one day I just decided to reach out to them, and I had been doing all this marketing work, and I said, hey, would you guys be interested in marketing work? And I'll be, you know, just all I want to do is to be able to come down and partake in this, these kind of experiences.
Yeah.
And so what unbeknownst to me, the actual master shaman who owns Blue Morpho Tours at the time, he had been doing his own little kind of energetic ceremony work, whatever you want to call it. The labels aren't important. But in the ceremony, he said, spirits, bring me a marketing person. And I literally showed up 48 hours later and said, hey, can I be your marketing guy? I just want to be able to come down. And so all this kind of synchronistically manifested. And I went down there December 21st or 2012 when the whole world was supposed to end. And I had my first sort of near-death afterlife sort of experience. And like you, it really shifted my perspective to start asking the bigger questions. And business became less about, like literally overnight, it was, you know, one day, how can I make a buck? How can I get through to like, what kind of difference am I making on the planet? Who am I showing up with? Who do I really want to help? Who am I meant to serve? What kind of difference am I meant to make? Why am I doing what I'm doing? Why am I doing this for other people? What do they want? And just it created this new reality that involves so much of a bigger, wider perspective than I had before that. But I think that's a pretty crazy story. You got to admit it's at least pretty good, don't you think?
So where does this lead you? So where are you now? Because obviously prior to this, you were running an SEO agency, and obviously you're a marketer like myself. So where is it? Where, you know, obviously you've had this experience.
Yeah, I mean, what I ultimately kind of what it led me to realize was that for me, business was always like an iterative process where like a lot of people talk about you know, their big wins. They made a bunch of money 1 month. But what I found is that there's more variables than most people realize, in the sense of, like, do you actually enjoy what you're doing? Is this who the people you really want to help? Does this inspire you on a day-to-day basis? And what I found is that if you don't really resolve those questions, eventually it will create like some sort of block in your life. And so for me, how that's really kind of presented itself is really like my girlfriend and I, we travel the world. We work with the kind of businesses really that are most like us, because we find that's where we have the biggest impact to be able to help people. You know, that's, you know, coaches, consultants, agency owners, those kind of people. And that just evolved out of, we are one ourselves. So it's like we enjoyed working with the people that we're most like. And like, you know, for example, Paul, you mentioned to me on the show that you're all about passion and those deeper questions, and having lost it and got it back again. And that really just kind of struck a chord with me, because, you know, what it's led to today is really valuing, I think, the most important thing in any business is the real relationships that are behind it, and not just, you know, the dollars and cents that come in. And so that's the biggest thing I find is, you know, we're actually, one of the things, like the goals we're working at right now is to build 10,000 real close personal loving relationships. And I set that goal because every time I found that I met like an amazing entrepreneur, it just inspired me and lit me up. And I just was amazed at the things they would do. But when I would meet sort of everyday people, sometimes it would just blow me away. Like, if you deal too much with the general public and you're an entrepreneur, you'll start to lose faith in humanity at a really fast speed. But when you deal with the people who are like really actively making a change and inspiring, it's just has such a ripple effect in everything you're doing. So that's what it's kind of led to now is working with the people that really, you know, our clients are in many ways much cooler than we are.
I see. To me, I, not to take away from your story, what I'm realizing is that I think humanity or society or however you want to look at it is heading to a critical changing point. And I wasn't aware of this until I started actually, you know, because originally Life, Passion and Business were purely simply about my own journey to try and find more meaning in my life. But what I've recognized is over the last 6 months as I've been running this journey is that we're now heading to a time where everybody is going to have to start finding meaning in their life, because work is going to change, and it's going to change so much over the next 10 years that where people get their kind of their buzz from or their juice from is just not going to be there anymore. You know, as AI starts to take over so much of our lives, we're going to find ourselves questioning what we're here for.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's one of those things that I kind of feel like life will force your hand on it, even if you don't, because what I've seen is, especially in business in our world, like a lot of marketers really brag about when they make a bunch of money. And what nobody tells you that when you actually do that behind the scenes, that often it comes with being completely stressed out about how fast you're growing and cash flow and the employees you have. And it makes you start to question, why am I even doing this if this is making me even more miserable than I was before? And so, yeah, you know, a lot of people, when they get into business, I don't think they have those deeper level kind of questions going on. At least I didn't personally, so I can't really speak for everybody. But what kind of comes out of it is that you don't realize that even when you get it, if you've only really thought about one piece or one aspect of it, and you're really not giving back and serving humanity in a bigger way and actually making a difference, that you feel good about yourself when you look in the mirror and truly feel like that what you're doing will carry on, you know, past your own mortality, it's going to leave you unfulfilled in one way or another. And so I think life will kind of push you to do that, because it's really about creating, at least in my mind, wins for everybody, you know, where what you're doing benefits whoever you work with, it benefits the people they work with, and it has a ripple effect in everything you're doing. And so I think, you know, you're absolutely right that meaning is something that life will force your hand on. If you don't have it yet, it'll show you that without it, you're going to have a really, really hard time.
Yeah. It is interesting in terms of, you know, it's like, I do wonder where this sits in the world in terms of, like, it's very easy for you and I to be picky about the kind of clients we work with, so that, because we work in that kind of environment. But there's a big critique at the moment going on in the UK around obesity, because the UK is getting fatter. And there's a campaign that's been happening in Newcastle where they're trying to get the Newcastle as a community to lose £100,000 in weight. And they achieved it this week. You know, there was 12,000 people in Newcastle signed up to lose weight, and they lost £100,000 between them. But one of the big critiques they had was that the food industry deliberately goes out to sell inappropriate food to people. And it is quite questioning, isn't it, like where that sits in the world, where that's going to sit in the future, because, you know, that is not serving their customers. And yet those companies are in a dilemma because they have to sell food to survive. They have to sell this stuff to survive. And it makes me, that's where I'm questioning at the moment, is like how those large industries kind of mutate and change. But anyway, that's me on my soapbox. So look, tell me, before you took this elixir, or whatever you want to call it, what was your life like? William, how did you get to where you are? How did you get to that place?
To be honest, it was a really weird life journey. Like I've been working online since, I want to say, I don't know, 2007, maybe 2006. So I don't know, whatever that is, 12 years. And when I first got into it, it wasn't like I woke up one day and said, what I really want to do is work on the internet and change people's lives and make a difference in the world. Quite the opposite. It was more like the city I grew up in, which is Windsor, Ontario, Canada, is largely dependent on car companies, Ford, General Motors, Chrysler. And right about then, I had been trained in school to be an engineer, and the economy just started to really tank. And not only were companies not hiring, but they were laying off people by the tens of thousands at that point. And so I woke up without really any way to, you know, even be able to make a living. And it was funny because I had a friend who did real estate, and he called me up on the phone one day, and he said, I wrote a real estate course on the internet, or we're going to sell it on the internet. And I remember thinking, I was like, we? I was like, this is your course. You're going to sell it. And he said, well, yeah, but you're really good with computers, so you'll figure it out. And I said, well, I don't know how to make a website or anything like that. And he's like, yeah, but you can figure it out. And then just hung up the phone. And I remember I thought about it a couple of days, and I was like, well, you don't really have anything else better going on. And of course, you know, the promise of being able to, in my mind's eye, of, you know, being able to work from a laptop and travel the world and see places was pretty appealing. So I decided to give it a jump into it. And then when you don't realize when you first get into it, there's more you don't know than you do know. And so I'd probably say the first 2 years I made exactly $0 on the internet. So I remember, you know, I meet a lot of people who say, I've been trying this stuff for 2 weeks. Why am I not rich yet? And I kind of laugh because my own personal journey, I'll still never forget the first day I logged into my email and somebody gave me $47 for a real estate course. It was quite the happy dance. It's pretty embarrassing. I'm thankful I wasn't able to record my $47 happy dance on video. But, you know, it was like incrementally inched its way forward. And then what you start to learn as you get more and more of the pieces that you can start focusing on, you know, being more choosy and being more selective and doing it with more reason and more purpose and in the place you can make the greatest impact with the least or the most amount of leverage and the way you're going to enjoy it the most. So that's kind of how it's evolved for me. But I certainly never woke up one day and said that, hey, I want to work on a laptop. But I think the more things have changed for me, like the business has grown and we're working with cooler people. And, you know, I've spoken on stage all over kind of North America for that. But what's really changed for me is how much it's actually the same, is that the reasons I got into it in the first place, you know, have stayed the same, is because we still get to travel the world. My girlfriend and I, we still meet amazing people. We still focus every day on kind of making a difference and really kind of living life on our own terms, being able to wake up when we want to, eat the food we want, to connect and work with the people we want. And so those, I think, are the real reasons people get into the laptop lifestyle, not to try and become instant millionaires. And it's really about that, like, freedom and flexibility that it provides. And we're really fortunate that we've been able to do that. So I guess in a nutshell, that's kind of how we've gotten to that point, if that makes any sense.
So, okay, you were traveling around. So what led you? So that sounds like an idyllic lifestyle, traveling around. And, but having done some travel over the last few weeks, I can tell
yes,
you
it has
its challenges, particularly when you can't get decent Wi-Fi. But hey, that's, you know, I can now understand that triangle of Maslow's hierarchy of need with Wi-Fi at the very bottom.
Unless you're an internet marketer, then it's first.
Yeah, it's right at the very bottom. Yeah, before anything else needs to be done, you need the bloody Wi-Fi because you can't work.
Yeah.
But yeah, I know that's anyway. But you know, that's the joke of it. But you know, obviously you obviously had it worked out. So what led you to take this drug, for want of a better word? You know, to why?
You know, I mean, it's one of those things that, you know, that somebody once told me that the main side effect of drinking ayahuasca is that you'll never be able to stop talking about ayahuasca for the rest of your life. And it is definitely significantly true, but there's certain, there's an evangelism often in people who think it's for everybody and who's going to save the world. And I personally don't think that's the case. Like, it's one of those things, like, I think if you're called to do it, it's for you, but that doesn't mean it's for everybody. And there's lots of other ways to experience the same kind of healing through less kind of, you know, intense experiences. And it's just certainly not for everybody. But
well, of course, you know, you're shortcutting, aren't you? Because, I mean, the way to get to this is meditation and breath work. And I have heard of people reaching these kind of places. But it takes effort and work. And ayahuasca shortcuts that, I'm guessing.
Yeah, I would say so in some ways. You know, one of the experiences that at least that I've had on it is one of the things that it's done for me is it like just distorts linear time in the sense of like subjectively you experience what felt like to you like 10 years, but you know, you're only a day older tomorrow. And so you just have a lot more time to think about things than most people do. So in many ways, it's like a very, very intense, but like deeply kind of profound meditation. And certainly it can be a shortcut. And a lot of it really depends on how it's used. Like to me, they're just tools in the sense of, you know, a knife is something that can make a 5-star chef meal. It can also, you know, commit murder if you want. So it's not really the knife, it's the intention of the person using it. And I think that factors in as well. Because one of the things that it at least does for me is like it very much humbles you to just kind of look at the truth of your life as it really is. And so for some people, that's an easier process than others. For me, it like, you know, it was kind of difficult to face the parts of self that you don't like, but it ultimately, it liberates you in a business sense because you start showing up much more real for people and less putting on fronts and trying to pretend you got it all figured out when in reality, you know, we're all kind of making it up as you go. And you mentioned the amazing thing about travels. Like we've had so many beautiful experiences. Ilka and I, we took a road trip from Montreal, Canada, drove 8,000 kilometers down to San Diego, stayed there a couple of weeks. Then we went up all the way to the northern part of California, lived in the San Francisco Bay Area for like 2 months. Then we flew to Hawaii, lived. We left just after a volcano, or just before a volcano erupted, which was pretty good timing. Went to Thailand for a month. We had some pit stops in China and Russia. And now we're in Spain as we're having this interview right now in the Canary Islands. I see the ocean just, you know, 50-100 feet out the window. And all that sounds really nice, but there's lots and lots of little challenges that come with it, including we were riding motorcycles in Thailand and, you know, we drove all the way up a mountain in the national park, 3 hours on a motorcycle, and then ran out of gas in the middle of nowhere. And it's not as if you can just call your insurance company and send somebody. So we actually had to go to this dirt floor hut village and they sold us Coca-Cola bottles full of gasoline. That was interesting. We had another one that we got a flat tire, had to drive 50 kilometers back on a flat tire. And then one of them, the tires were completely bald and we wiped out on it. So that's the normal mode of travel. So, I mean, it's not all rainbows and butterflies for sure. In many ways, we actually have more problems in the sense of, you know, you never know if the Wi-Fi is going to work or food's going to be available. And there's just so many little things you don't think of with connecting with people in a different language who don't even understand or think frame thoughts the same way and they can't understand what you mean. But I think it's just, you know, having and inviting those problems has been more fun and more interesting for us. So what really led me to it more than anything was a combination of two things, is just a deep inner knowing that that kind of life was possible and possible for me, but that I didn't know what I needed to face within myself to be able to make that real. And then secondly, to be honest, is the stories I read were just so persuasive. Like it was, yeah, I remember at the point where I just said, okay, I can't die and not know what that experience is like. So I have to try it at least one time and find out. And
right.
So, you know, it wasn't like a decision like I was going to become involved in this world. I've since, you know, become a shaman who actually helps people administer and guide through these kind of journeys, which can be done with and without substances. So it's not something people have to do if it's not their thing. But having said that, to be honest, it was just really kind of seductive in the fact that, like, could one really take, you know, an elixir, as you put it, and actually have like a near-death experience? Like, is that really possible? And so I kind of, you know, volunteered myself as the guinea pig. And then the other thing that kind of put it over the edge for me was when I realized that it's a substance your body makes naturally, and it's not something people typically overdose on. So you can think you're going to die, you can feel like you're dying, you can experience what at least feels to you experientially like death, but you're going to wake up tomorrow in your bed and you're going to be okay. So that kind of put it over the top for me as well.
So, okay, from your new perspective, what is success?
You know, that's such a good question too, because I think when most people think success, at least certainly I did in the beginning, is very like material trappings. And it's like,
We were all told that. We were sold that dream, weren't we? We were told that success is the car, the house, the girlfriend, the family, you know, the pension scheme. We were told this is success.
I couldn't agree more. And certainly that's the vision I had for myself as well. And it wasn't until I really started to experience like my first sort of monetary success online, and you know, when we started having like $50,000 months and above that, that I found myself being miserable and more stressed out and more scared than I was before I was doing it. So like one of the things that happens is when you have a whole team in place and you don't really know how much money is going to be there from month to month, now you're not only responsible for your own paycheck, but now you got to feed 10 other people or 20 other people, and they all depend on you for their livelihood, and you're worried that if you don't have another $50,000 a month next month, that you're not going to be able to pay them, and you're going to have to, you know, leave somebody out on the street. And so it really kind of changed that for me. But what I realized, I guess, is I heard somebody's definition, one of my mentors, who said success is doing what I want, when I want, with who I want. And for me, I feel like that's the best definition I've ever had, because it's been very interesting. Is one of my close personal friends is an entrepreneur who's 24 years old, travels the world, and he has three companies that are doing a total of $50 million a year. And from a material point of view, he like literally makes about as much money as Jesus does in any given week. And but what's interesting is we traveled the world together and went a few different places, and he literally only carries half a backpack with him. He only carries one card, one phone. He has an apartment that has about 10 books in it, and that's it. Otherwise, it's completely empty. And he had a giant, giant mansion on the beach, and he found it was just too much work, too much upkeep, and he prefers simplicity. And yet his financial goals as he goes get bigger and bigger each year. So he's at, you know, doing 50 million, he's set out to make 100. And you start to realize as you deal with those people is that when you're at a point where you're doing 50 million a year, 100 million a year is not going to change your lifestyle at all. Like, it makes literally no difference to how you live. He's not staying at a nicer hotel or eating a fancier breakfast. It literally is all the same to him. But what it is for him is he wants to make the biggest difference. And that really comes down to me, like those three things: doing what you want, when you want, with who you want. And I think when I first started, the real measure of success to me, I guess, if you could put it into one thing, is how you spend an average day, not how you spend the high points and the really successful moments in your life, but how do you spend the boring time when nobody's watching you? And, you know, when I first started this journey, my life started in the worst possible way with an alarm clock going, and, you know, and then you wake up and you race and it always feels like time is against you because you're rushing to get somewhere so you can rush and go do some things. And then that's kind of how everything started for me, and it just felt really uncomfortable. And now, you know, my girlfriend and I, we wake up really whenever we feel like it, we go to sleep whenever we feel like it, and we, you know, eat when our bodies feel hungry, and we talk to the people that really most inspire us and want to talk to us. And is really about having the choice to do that. And sometimes, you know, that doesn't mean it's easier. In fact, in many ways, it means it's harder. Like, we have some days where we work till 4 a.m, like nonstop from the time we wake up till 4 a.m. Certainly not every day is like that, but we do it because we choose to and because it like fits into the kind of our deeper mission. But it's really about having, to me, the choice and the freedom. And if you have that on an average, typical day, and you're doing what you want with who you want, when you want, then I feel like that, to me, is the true definition of success. Now, if you can do that and be happy, I find that almost always that involves having real meaningful relationships and connecting with people and deeper level stuff. But to me, the biggest indicator of whether somebody is successful or not is how they spend an average day, their typical kind of boring day. And the more things they're doing that, you know, are of their own choice, where they're taking responsibility for their life, that's, to me, what success has really changed or evolved to, and how I understand it now.
That's a good answer. So passion for you, clearly you're passionate about what you do now, passionate about working with inspiring people. I think that's what you said.
Yeah.
Is there any kind of tip you have for people who think have lost their passion? How do you find passion if you've lost it? And if you've never lost it, you're never going to know. But I'm just curious if you had an answer to that.
Yeah, I mean, the best thing that's helped me, and I certainly don't have all the answers on that as well, and I don't think anybody does, to be quite honest, but what I've learned with it is, I remember one time I was working in the lawyer niche, and I was at the really big annual conference. I was a speaker there, and the headline speaker was a famous American football quarterback named Joe Montana. And I really didn't think I was going to learn a whole lot from American football quarterback. Just thought, you know, what's an athlete going to say that's really all that profound? You know, I throw a ball. I throw it really well. And it was interesting. He said that he said he believed the way you did one thing was the way you did anything. And he said, so what most people did is the big event in American football is obviously the Super Bowl. And what he said is most people, they practice every day. And then the Super Bowl comes up and they try and turn it on and suddenly be inspired and be passionate and play their best and live up to it. And he said, you can't do it then. So for him, what it meant is, he said every single day he practiced the Super Bowl. And he said, by the time I got there, I had done it 10,000 times. And I had been practicing the Super Bowl every day I practiced. So when I showed up at practice, I was winning the Super Bowl. When I threw the ball on first down, I was winning the Super Bowl. When I was marching down the field, I was winning the Super Bowl. And he said, so by the time I got there, my life had already been that. And so it was just a representation of all the little things I had been doing up until that point. And I think the biggest thing is that people look for a really big life passion in a big sense, and they don't realize that it's a culmination of about 10,000 little things. And so it's like, are you eating something you really enjoy? Is it going to make you healthier? Are you around people that make you feel good? How do you wake up in the morning? Do you like the bed? Is it a nice, comfortable pillow you're sleeping in? What are the thoughts you're thinking of as you're doing these things? You know, are you in a place in the world where you're feeling inspired? You know, the interesting thing is that entrepreneur I mentioned earlier, who we traveled the world with, who, you know, is doing $50 million a year, the one thing he spends on is, he expends on really high-end, crazy-ass expensive hotel rooms. And he says, like, it helps just inspire him to look out and have a beautiful view wherever he is and to be in, like, supremely comfortable spaces. So he won't spend on food or shoes. He's been wearing the same backpack for 20 years, but then he drops $5,000 a night on a hotel. And so I think it's, like, one of those things that it's really, like, if you're looking for passion in a big sense, find it on all the little things. Find reasons to be passionate about little tasks that you're doing. Or, you know, like, so, like, here's a simple tip that we do all the time is we just put nice music on in the background when we're playing. I had a really awesome friend of mine. I called him one time on Skype, and as he was talking, he just had this beautiful piano music in the background. And I was like, what's up with that? And he said, oh, it just helps me work more relaxed and more peacefully. I never really thought about that. And I was like, that's a good idea. So we've started listening to music as we do it. We put on incense and have nice smells, and we work comfortably, and we lay down, and we're connecting with people we want, doing work we want. So it's not any one thing. It's a lot of little things. Like in the background here, my girlfriend has some nice photos of us. There's a couple little cute stuffed animals, some flowers we have, a picture of Mother Teresa on the wall. And, you know, the ocean's out my window. And it's not any one of those things per se that makes me feel passionate, but it's a lot of little things. And I think most people get it wrong because they're trying to discover their life purpose in one big grand realization. And that's such a hard thing to do. And I think it can start with something as small as like, what are you going to have for breakfast that makes you passionate? Because if you're eating food sort of, you know, mindlessly, then you can't suddenly, as Joe Montana says, turn on the Super Bowl. You're gonna have a hard time doing that unless every day and every moment is your Super Bowl. And so that's my biggest thing, is just like, look at all the little things you're doing and start to take ownership of those and see how they can be more fun and more interesting. And when you do that,
that's a really good answer. It's a really good answer. So I always give people this opportunity. It's a question I give everybody, and the reason I give it to them is so that, because if you, once we put the phone down here, I don't want you to go, oh, I wish I'd said so. Yeah. So the question I always ask people is there anything that I should have asked you that I haven't?
That is a good question. You know, I would,
and you can say no, I'm fine if you want to, but that it's an open question for, it's an open thing for you to say, like, well, yeah, this is what I want to say about this or about anything.
Well, I think the biggest thing is, because you're so about passion, is the one thing I kind of would like to talk about, if it's okay with you, is just I think it's important for people to have whatever their mission or their purpose is, their passion, is actually written out in a, like, a documented way where they can see it and remind themselves of it, because it's like anything else. It's not one of those things you suddenly realize and experience all at once. It's like reminding yourself again and again in a lot of the little ways. So the thing I wrote for myself, and this is, you know, not something I had in a grand realization. It was really just every time somebody else had inspired me, I wrote it down and put it together in one sort of mission state for myself, which is, my mission is to inspire people to live their highest purpose, to raise consciousness, to live their dreams, to uplift humanity's consciousness through business, to do that in a way of absolute joy, with humor, love, expressing all of our God-given gifts, to serve all creations, and to leave this world a better place than I found it, for animals, plants, and people too. Now, I think that's pretty cool, but that's one of those things that it's taking little pieces of things I've heard over the last year. So it's taken me a year to be able to write it in, you know, one little sentence. So it's not as if I did it all at once. But I think just having a written reminder of who you are and what you're about and what you stand for and what your principles is one of those that I feel like most people don't put that into their business. And then what they find is experiences like I had, where you have a really good month and you're more stressed out than you were before you had it.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So tell me, for you, what is the meaning of life? Because let's put it this way, you know, we're born, we have a childhood, you know, we eat, we drink, we go through teenage years, we have sex, we have families, we find a life partner, we do all these things, we run businesses, we earn money, and we do this stuff. But why? What's it all for?
See, that's one of those things I think it has an easy answer in understanding, but in actual practice is where the difficulty comes, is you know, this is just my personal belief, not trying to persuade or convince anybody, but what I found is the meaning of life, as I've come to understand it, is literally for the experience of life itself. And I think a lot of people get hung up in sort of religious beliefs where they believe what they're working towards is some, you know, after a heaven or whatever have you. And instead they put off living today because they, you know, believe that they're going to be rewarded with a better tomorrow. And what I think is it's really about is living the highest version of you that you can express today. The tricky part of that, I think, is when you think about who am I really and what do I really want? What do I want to do it? Why do I want to do it? Those generally aren't easy things to answer through your experience. And they take a lot of trial and error. And I think the meaning of life, at least as I understand it right now, is to make the biggest difference both for yourself and the people around you that you truly care about. And that, and what I found is a lot of times the experiences you've already had are in some way or form beneficial to other people who are 5 or 10 steps behind you on the same journey, and they have, you know, a lot of similarities. And so, like, for example, one of the things that we recently did is we have a live event, and it was open to people who own agencies, and I hadn't really thought about it, but 3 of the people who came in this, like, really high-end kind of intimate mastermind had ran SEO agencies, and having did that for 7 years, I had a lot of useful insights for them, and I didn't really have to prepare or think about it, because it was just something I had done. And you know, I no longer really liked that business, and I got out of it, but I never really thought that, well, there's other people that want to get where I used to be. And so it was really, really helpful. So I think the meaning of life as I understand it right now is really to share your best and most valuable experiences with people so that it really benefits everybody, including yourself. And I think that's the most joyous and purposeful way that you can, that one can live life. But the nuances, of course, is that everybody wants something different. We've all had a little bit different experiences, and who we're meant to help and connect with is all a little bit different. And how we relate to that and figure it out is obviously a challenge. So to me, it's like it's simple, but it's not simple at the same time. It's very simple in just what do you want to experience and why. But expressing that is a lifetime of learning, I think. Mm.
You've been working hard on this, I can tell.
Yeah, I've been thinking about it for a while.
So, Frankie, if people want to get in touch with you, how would they do so?
Well, Paul, you know, I think it's really cool. I love these philosophical discussions with you. So first, before I answer that, I would love to interview you if you're down for it, and just share kind of your life's purpose, because you've got a really deep story as well.
Yeah, that'd be fine. I'd love to be interviewed. Okay. I'm always up for that.
Perfect. Best way is I'm active on Facebook a lot right now. Frankie Finn. Last name is spelled F-I-H-N. It's an unusual spelling, but again, F-I-H-N. And if you're interested in just, you know, talking, that's cool too. If you want to know some business things, what we're kind of offering right now is, it's taken me a long time to realize all the really important things about business, both the systems to bring new people as well as the kind of deeper level questions about you and what you really want. So we've organized all this into a checklist so that anybody who just wants to really build a big business that not only is consistent, reliable, and predictable and brings you kind of money for you and your family, but also does it in a way where you're feeling like you're uplifting and you're expressing your purpose and connecting with the people that you really want to. If that's something you're interested in, you know, if you're a coach, consultant, agency owner, expert, particularly because that's what we've done for so many years, then Frankie Finn on Facebook, that's the best way. And, you know, we don't do it through websites and things because I always love the relationships and the people behind them. So connect with me and we'll get you whatever you need. So that's the best way to
reach. Fantastic. Fantastic. So we'll have those links on the podcast page for everybody who wants to, if anybody wants to connect with you. So Frankie, thank you so much for taking the time to speak to me this afternoon /evening. It's been a joy to talk to you. And I'm sure we will speak again, and particularly if I'm going to be interviewed by you.
Yes, sir. I'm actually really looking forward to that, because you have a lot of deep insights from having done your kind of work. And I'm sure you have some very, very unique perspectives on that.
Well, I don't know, but we'll see. We'll see what happens. Anyway, thanks so much. And as I said, I'm sure we'll speak again.
Take care, Paul. May the force be with you.
Thank you. That was Life, Passion and Business with Paul Harvey and my guest Frankie Finn. And as with all my guests, you can find their contact details on the website lifepassionandbusiness.com underneath the relevant podcast. You will have heard on the program, on the show, that Frankie has invited me onto his program. I will keep you posted. The next podcast on Life, Passion and Business will be a co-hosted show with Lisa Avery, and the topic of conversation for this week is work and vocation. I hope you find time to catch it. All the best, and thanks for listening. That interview was recorded in May 2018, so not long after the podcast actually started. It was really fascinating to go back and re-listen to it, and I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. So as you would have heard in the intro, the Reasons and Results event is over. If you'd like access to those recordings, please check out the Life, Passion, Business page, or check out the show notes above for the links for those recordings. That's it for me. I will be back with a Sunday reflection. All the best.